Hello, hello, listeners. This is Lexi, and welcome to the first replay episode of Being a Whole Person. We decided that during our break between seasons, we would reshare some of our favorite episodes, the highest rated episodes. And the first one we are going to share is with Lucia Holly. And this is just one of those episodes that kind of just makes you feel good. Lucia is such a delight, and we really enjoyed our conversation with her. And by the looks of our ratings, you also enjoyed this conversation. So if you've never listened to this episode, I encourage you to listen to it now. It is a wonderful episode. If you've listened to it before, maybe listen to it again and see if you can glean any new information from it. And I just hope that you're having a fantastic day, and we will be back with season two, still trying to decide on a date, but don't worry, we will be back with a few new episodes.
You're listening to the Being a Whole Person podcast. I'm Rebecca Haas, a pianist, composer, and creative wellness coach.
And I'm Lexi Rollet, the astrologer behind Alexandria Astrology. And this is a podcast all about creative entrepreneurship, self-care, and spirituality, and how they blend in our lives.
Lexi and I are having honest conversations with a variety of other creative entrepreneurs to show the whole story of what it's like to be a business owner, not just the Instagrammable version.
By digging into the real experiences of being a creative entrepreneur, we explore how it is possible to blend our career with our life and feel like a whole person.
Welcome to the Being a Whole Person podcast. Hi, Lucia. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and how you got to what you're doing now?
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Lucia Holly. I'm a nutritional therapy practitioner, and I have my master's in social work, clinical mental health. So I work and have been working with clients one-on-one in the nutrition sphere. I love talking about the gut-brain connection and how it's a two-way street. So over the years, I've been doing different one-on-one coaching and group coaching with people to really help them feel like they can take the fear out of food and kind of all the different permutations of what that phrase could mean. So I work with people on feeling like they have ideally a lot of liberation when it comes to how they're approaching their food and food intake. They feel really cool and groovy with their gut health and mental health and how that all ties together. And then I also run my blog, The Essential Omnivore. So I write gluten-free recipes and all that good stuff.
Yeah, awesome. So the listeners don't know, we worked together in 2017, and I really loved how holistic your approach was, like how you really viewed me as a whole person. You know, the questionnaire might be scary to some people that there's so many things that you ask, but like, I love that because you can have all those puzzle pieces and then work on putting them together. And then, you know, your background in social work, I felt like really played into some of the issues that I was having with anxiety. And so you were able to look at the mental side too. So I personally really love that your approach is so vast and wide reaching.
Well, thank you. And yeah, it's always so nice to hear some, you know, I have this whole thing about like external validation and internal validation in terms of like being a business owner and kind of doing your own thing. But having, obviously, when you're working with clients, you want clients to feel like there is success or that they're progressing towards whatever their chosen goals or, you know, ideals are. So I'm always really happy to hear that. And, you know, food and nutrition, it's such a vast subject. And that was really, you know, part of my history. And sometimes I'm like, man, I got to get a more succinct way of talking about like how I came to food and nutrition, but I just don't because it's a long and winding path. But part of my journey was really feeling like, you know, I would go to different doctors, and I believe in the Western medical system. Like, it's so good for acute medical care, but I was coming to them as kind of a younger kid or teenager who really needed help with more chronic things and more of the subtle support in terms of food or nutrition, or just some, you know, being a kid that was feeling off and not really being able to put words around that. So really, when I started to teach myself about food and nutrition, which was extremely empowering, I really realized, I was like, we can't just compartmentalize our health. Like, my gut health directly affects my mental health and my emotional well-being and vice versa. So I wanted to make sure when I was stepping more into nutrition coaching that that was really part of what I was offering. Because if someone just said like, well, just eat this one food and your gut's going to feel good without any of the rest of the education that came around that, that wouldn't feel as empowering to me. I wanted to make sure that I could offer that as much as possible to other people.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I like the approach that you've been taking, the direction that your posts have been taking recently, where it's more about the culture of dieting and the culture of control in our larger culture. And all these things really do play into how we see ourselves and, I don't know, how we are as people. So I really appreciate that you're not just all about, okay, so we can fix this and here's how we fix that. And, you know, it's not that direct and you approach people as complex beings because we are.
We are. And like, if we can just accept that, and that can be one of the most challenging parts is, you know, people when it comes to food and nutrition or fitness, even like a lot of the stuff can kind of tie into just general, like what are the things that we practice that help us feel well? People want to have a clear, concise answer. Like, just tell me what to eat. Tell me how to move. And I'm like, ooh, sorry, I can't do that. I'm going to ask you how you want to feel and how you have been feeling and like where you can make these tweaks, because otherwise it ties more into this kind of, at least my idea of us being in this controlling culture. And like, if we can step away from that, there's a lot of nuance there. And that is the challenge. I think just once we start to explore that, that's how we step away from the dieting culture. But that's the part that is really, really tough, is saying like, ooh, no, I get to have autonomy and I get to respect all the signals that my body is sending me, even the ones I maybe don't really want to be hearing or listening to.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit more about how you went from getting a master's in social work to starting your business as nutrition therapy?
Yeah, totally. So I got my master's in social work. I became really fascinated by the field of social work because it was the first career and field that I knew of, at least, that had a set of core values. And I was like, whoa, wait, what? Respecting the dignity of a person, like advocating for social justice, that's part of a career? Okay, cool. So I was pursuing that. And I've been geeking out on nutrition since I was like 17 or 18. So it's been a while. So nutrition definitely came first. But my plan for myself really was to go through school. And then I love working with kiddos who are on the autism spectrum. And I had worked with them in kind of different capacities here and there over the years. So my idea was to get my nutritional therapy certification and have my master's, but really be focusing on more of a clinical track in the field of social work and work with kids on who are on the spectrum, and maybe, if possible, incorporate talking about food and nutrition because there's so much assistance and help that can be there. But, you know, life kind of happened, and I was offered a job at a gym right as I graduated both programs, and the job was way more in nutrition and had nothing to do with kind of that clinical track. So I figured, hey, why not? Let me jump into this. And truth be told, I think I was scared. I think I was scared to, when I was graduating, I was totally scared to do the nutrition thing full time. I was like, no, I'll just do this. I'll do it on the side, like for friends and family here and there. So getting that job was a really cool honor, and it really pushed me to say, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to do this now. And then I did that, and I got more comfortable, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to keep rolling with this because it really aligns with a lot of what I do want to be doing.
Mm-hmm. That is awesome. So after you finally started your business as a nutrition, do you say nutrition therapist or do you say nutrition therapy practitioner?
Yeah, the certification is as a nutritional therapy practitioner, and it is a mouthful. So I say NTP.
Yeah.
I used to say nutritional therapist, but that's just, it's an NTP or nutritional therapy practitioner. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say NTP for now. After you became an NTP, did anything happen that you weren't prepared for?
Oh, in terms of like business or working with clients?
In terms of business. Or yeah. However you want to answer it, really.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of support when I first started. because I was working through a gym. So I was working as an employee, which is not necessarily the case, especially, you know, things are changing now for NTPs. I think they're being more recognized, especially in like chiropractic clinics or naturopathic clinics, alternative health and wellness arenas. I think people really recognize the need for someone to step in to be able to talk to clients about, NTPs kind of talk about the foundations of health and wellness. So we talk about digestion, mineral balance, you know, just any of these kind of beginning things and just like, what's protein? What's a carbohydrate? Like, what can you see those on your plate? Those things. So there's more of a need now that I think people are noticing. But so when I was starting out, I really lucked out in that I had that support in terms of business. So I could really show up to my clients and work on word of mouth and creating a really, you know, kind of safe experience for clients and be able to put my focus there versus like, oh my gosh, how do I get a business name or how do I do all this other stuff that's more clerical? So I lucked out and then played some catch up in the last year or so when I was like, and now I'm going out on my own. So I think there is kind of, you know, ebb and flow to that growth cycle.
Mm-hmm. Did you find it easier to transition into being fully self-employed because you kind of had that client base already? Like, did people stick with you?
Yeah, they did. Yes. And, you know, I had that. That was also part of the conversation and stepping away from the gym was that there were no contracts or obligations for people to feel like they had to split. So it was left to clients. Probably the biggest thing was transitioning to being fully virtual because back then I was seeing clients in person. So that was definitely part of it was obviously now, well, maybe not obviously to people who are listening, but in the last 6-7 months, I moved, I was in Minneapolis and now I'm in Portland in Oregon. So when I was still in Minneapolis, I think some clients were like, wait, you're not in the office, what the heck? And we're meeting on a screen, but you're in the same city. So there's a little bit of challenges there, but pretty easy.
I think that brings up a really good point that people buy people. Like you technically have a different job if we want to think about it that way, because you don't work for that gym anymore and you work for yourself, but yet you still have the same clients. So it's really cool that they were, it's just kind of proof in the pudding, right? That people buy people, they don't really care about the big name behind it.
Totally. No, I love that. Exactly. Right. And we're in such an interesting time these days too, where there's so much discussion around like being your own brand or being a personal brand or branding yourself, which can kind of like, for me, that can be an exhausting conversation, but it's really true. And as much as we can like put all these extra layers onto what that means, I think actually if we keep things really simple, it's just saying, okay, can you show up? Can you show up and be truthful in your work? And like, if that resonates with people, that's going to create the strongest bonds. And in terms of like the work that I've been doing, where it's one-on-one primarily work, so you need to have trust and bonds where people are, you know, you're offering them a container to explore themselves and make these changes in food and nutrition. I think that is one of the most powerful things, especially for people who are starting out in business, is to say like, nope, I get to trust myself and my process and that this will be helpful for people.
Yeah, I think showing up as yourself, this has come up in some other conversations we've had on the podcast, and I think being yourself is the most beneficial thing you can do. And I think about this a lot with like Instagram. I follow people on Instagram and I'm like, oh yeah, they seem cool. And I've made a lot of friends that way. And actually, I think I followed you on Instagram before I looked for your services. And I think that was actually a big part of it is I was like, oh, Lucia seems very like genuine and down to earth. And, you know, sometimes I see her make a funny video on Instagram stories and she has this curtain with Jeff Goldblum on it. And that's really fun. You know, like those little bits, I'm like, okay, this isn't like a very serious person who's going to judge me. And whether we brand ourselves or not, I think that stuff comes through. But I also think it's really tricky to put it into words in a way that can effectively convey it for the people who haven't seen you in that way. So I get that.
Right. And it can almost be this nuanced conversation where it's like, you know, if you start to nitpick that stuff too much, is it even genuine or authentic anymore? Like it does have to be when it comes to social media, at least, you know, for what I can speak from, you just have to kind of show up and hope that people get it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and pursue, like, also that's what resonates for me. Like, I don't want to follow people who feel really fake or feel like they're trying to sell me something that doesn't feel like it's come from a place of their own learning and experience. So it's just, you know, again, kind of tuning into that authenticity.
And I think people are more likely to get it whenever you're coming from a place of authenticity, because it's more relatable. You know what I mean?
Yes, definitely. Right, right. Yeah. And when it comes to how business works with that, like, if it isn't relatable, what are you doing?
Right, right.
Yeah, definitely. We're all in agreement. We want to be genuine.
Yes.
And we are. That's why we're having this podcast. We just want to be real. So maybe you already answered this in some of your other responses, but what do you wish you would have known before you started working for yourself?
That's a great question. And
besides everything.
I have a podcast too. I always feel bad when I ask someone a question there and then they say, that's a great question. Because it's just like, oh, I need a second to think about it.
That's okay.
Yeah. I wish I had known. And this sounds, it almost sounds like trite to say it. But I wish I had known all of that, everything that we just talked about being authentic and some of these big kind of like keywords. And I feel like they're kind of like sexy right now, like self-care, authenticity, all this stuff. I wish I had known that that was really, that that was okay. And that that is what does propel business growth, because you can read it, you can see it, but it's hard to trust that. Does that make sense? Like it, especially in our culture, I feel like it is easy to want to trust like our hustle culture of like go, 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 faster, faster, faster. But that leads to so much burnout. And especially for, you know, different people and different personalities, what burns me out is different than what burns someone else out. And like, I mean, Rebecca especially knows, like, I'm an empath, I'm an introvert, like, I'm a Taurus. Well, you know too, Alex, like, right? Like, low-key.
Oh, yeah.
So like how I get burned out is really different than someone else. So I think if I had, I was aware of that to a certain degree, but I think if I had really been comfortable with that, I probably wouldn't have been so burnt out, because I did feel burnt out at the end of my time working for someone else. And that I think happens naturally. So that's a great, you know, there are lots of silver linings around that. But really being able to trust my process is tough when you're starting out, because it's so easy to say, but I'm not a business expert, so can I trust that my process and my timeline will get me where I want to go? Most of the time, yes, but it's a scary thing to trust starting out.
We had this exact conversation in the interview we had this morning, actually, about trusting.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah, both about trusting your own process and about trusting rest above hustle. And we were like, hustle is canceled. We don't even want to use that word.
Right? Like what's anti-hustle? Like let hustle go, hustle itself out until it's just all burnt up and crispy.
Well, we actually kind of researched that whenever we were considering what to name this podcast. And what we found was that the opposite of hustle was alignment. At least that's the word on the street.
Ooh, I like that. I have not heard that. And that feels good.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
I feel that in my bones. My bones are like, mm-hmm. They align.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wish I had trusted that feeling, like you were saying about not doing all the things you should do. I totally echo that as a thing that I wish I would have known. But I think that comes with age and confidence too, and just like feeling like you know what you're doing in life and as a person more.
True. And with business too, and I would love to know what you two think about this, but also trusting, like you said, trusting the process and trusting that you're going to keep growing, like trusting that you aren't an expert. That's so tough, but it's so helpful to say like, well, every time I show up to something scary, it's the same as what happened when you're like a little kid or a teenager. Like you don't know until you try. So you can try to figure it out so much. Like I was a little kid, according to my mom, who was like doing deep knee bends before I like started to walk, because I really wanted to walk really well. Like I want to practice that and know it and get it right before I do it. But to a major extent, you can only practice so much before you just have to go out and do it. And not even to expect failure, but just to expect that it's going to feel weird. It's starting your own business, looking at this stuff, it's part of a change process. And you can't expect change to always feel really good, even if it's positive or appropriate change for you.
Yeah, yes. It's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is the nature of it. And yeah, we should accept that. And that will help, which is also hard.
Right. Well, and also, you can't wait till you're quote unquote ready, right? Because you're never going to be ready. You'll never feel truly ready. And by the time you do, the moment is already passed.
Right, right.
So you really do have to get out there and you just have to start. And, you know, anytime that you learn like a new skill, like for example, my business, I mean, I've been studying astrology for years, but it wasn't until like last year that I actually had literally just a smidgen of confidence enough to say, yes, I can read someone else's chart. Yeah. And that was enough to start because I knew in my heart that if I would have waited, it just, my opportunity would have passed.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. It's, and you know, that was stuff I would read about that. Like all of this stuff, there's also the difference between like what you feel or what you like logic out. So logically I would read stuff as like, you're never gonna feel ready. So just start. But I think it's interesting. What I notice is that I want to guess what I don't feel ready about. And then there's the stuff I'm hesitating on and not ready. I'm like, oh, that's part of the problem. It's like, it's not like the cute things. It's like the stuff that really makes me feel weird that I want to avoid or like be really perfect at before I do it. No, it's the harder stuff that you're just like, good enough, let's go.
Right. And, you know, if you keep doing something over and over and over again, you're going to learn more and more and more about it. Like, I guess this is kind of coming up into the way how people learn best, but I really feel like at some level, we all learn by doing. Even if we might learn better in other ways, of course, but I think we can't deny the power of learning from doing. And then that just kind of keeps going with this circle. Like, well, if you never do, then you never learn.
Right, right. And you can see that, you know, I think in food and nutrition a lot too, if you want to get into like the nuts and bolts about it, when people say like, just give me the perfect diet and I'll do it. And then I'll be great. I'll be so healthy. And like, life will be easy and beautiful. Like, okay, well, first off, we have to see like, what is a great diet for you might not be a great diet. And when I say diet, I just mean like dietary style. So like, how are you eating your food? What's great for you might not be great for someone else, but the only way you're going to know is to practice. You have to practice these different styles, and that practice might include eating more food, or it might include having more meals, or, you know, like however it's going to play out. It might include stepping away from gluten or dairy for a little bit. And it might include bringing more chocolate into your life. Like, it's so right. Delicious. Like, I want mine to do that. My heart has a lot of chocolate.
I'm actually there already. Yeah.
But, yeah. Right. You're like, I'm at that good chocolate level. But we don't know until we practice. And again, the practice is uncomfortable, but if we can be okay with discomfort, there's so much good stuff that comes from it.
Totally. Well, it's the stereotypical thing of it's the journey, not the destination, right. You know, but it really is. And I have definitely struggled with that in my own health journey. I'm like the majority of your clients. So it's like, just give me the thing that I need to do. And I'm going to do that for the rest of my life.
Right.
And it's all or nothing.
Right.
But now I have learned over time though, that it's, no, we're gonna try this thing, see how it works. If it doesn't work, that's fine. I can try something else. Or if it does work, great. You know, I figured something out. And it's just that process. And I feel like that's definitely apparent with our health, but I feel like it's with so many other things in life too.
Totally. Same with business, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've done, if I look at the different types of offerings I've offered, it's scary. Every time you offer something new and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. I hope everyone else doesn't know that I don't know what I'm doing. If you can just get, you know, comfortable with the discomfort and say, yeah, I'm going to be here. Like, this is all a practice. I think it takes off so much pressure, and then you can really enjoy that process a little bit more. And maybe you'll discover things that you don't like. Like, product flops or, you know, launches that don't go the way you want, but probably the same thing with food and nutrition or working out. Like, you go to a group class, maybe you don't love it once. You try some other form of like physical movement, you totally fall in love with it. But it's really just that you're offering yourself choices that I think is the best of it.
Mm-hmm. One more point though. I feel like the danger with this is not giving something enough time to really recognize if it's something for you or if it's not.
Right. Yeah, that's a beautiful point, right? That we have these different time frames, and what someone else's time frame, how it doesn't apply to yours too, that is something that I feel like you see, or I see a lot in business, and yes, for sure, in diet and nutrition and whatever else we could be, you know, aligning in this, right? It's like, you feel like, well, that person did it this quickly, so I should be able to do my thing that quickly. Or social media is like really fun to connect with people, but how much comparison happens there is such an easy trap to fall into. So I think as much as possible, you're so spot on. It's like, what is our short term or what is our long term? What are our processes like? And what do we do to make sure that we're checking in about those processes and seeing like, am I stepping away, trying something new? Cause like I'm feeling kind of hyper because of something deeper. Is it because I've checked in and I'm like, nope, next done. And that feels really good. I feel solid in that. That's, again, it's like takes us into this gray area that's really cool, but like, whoa, well, now we have to think about stuff again.
And it could just be impatience too. Like, I think impatience comes into play for almost everything, especially in our current society of instant gratification. Like, I tried it, it didn't work. Well, it's like, did I try it long enough? I don't really know. Or am I still waiting for whatever this is to work? And I haven't admitted to myself that I really should try something new. You know, like there's inertia too. There's so much gray area with that.
There is. And then that can be mind-boggling because you're like, oh my gosh, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I'm an entrepreneur. Like my brain is already going a million miles a minute and I'm trying to be anti-hustle, but still like make some bucks. It's no joke.
Yep.
It's no joke.
Yeah. So speaking of challenges, as we just spoke of a whole bunch of different challenges, what do you think has been one of the biggest challenges or hurdles in your business?
I think developing self-confidence and not like the super cutesy, like sexy, like I feel great about blah, blah, like all this stuff, but more of like the self-confidence to like say to yourself, I get to show up to this job and I get to decide what this job is. And I can, again, coming back to trust, I can trust that even if I don't know this 100%, or even if I know things are going to change in the future, because I think that's also a big part of being an entrepreneur, is recognizing that change is going to happen. Really having the self-confidence to say, but because I have a desire right now, I can pursue that. That was challenging for me.
I relate to that too. Yes. Because change is uncomfortable.
Right.
And we don't like discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Humans.
I know. What's up with that? Humans.
Right.
Humans. That's all I got. I don't know.
It feels like a Jerry Seinfeld stand-up right now.
Right?
I know.
What's the deal with humans?
Yeah. If anyone knew what the deal was with humans, like, that they should start their own business. Because I feel like we have that question all the time. Like, what are we doing? What's going on? But again, No one can know. Maybe Jerry Seinfeld does.
Maybe just.
But we're committing to the process. We're still working on it. So
yeah,
I think we'll be okay.
Right.
I hope. Shifting gears just a little bit, what are the things you do to take care of yourself, to support yourself as a human and also as a business person?
Yeah. A few things, and they've changed over the years. And in this last year, especially, I think I've really had to nail down not even maybe what they are, but the feeling that they give me. I think a lot of the times my mind can swim. It can be spinning. I can have all the info and all the ideas and be thinking of the clients or the recipes or the blog statistics or whatever. Our brains are huge. We can be thinking all the things. So for me, with self-care or however we want to phrase it, what feels best is whatever actions I can take or space I can give myself where I notice that my brain, like that chatter, starts to lessen. So for me, I've been really into walking.
Me too.
Just like going for walks and listening to music, not even sometimes podcasts, but that can kind of start to tap into like my learning mindset where I want to be learning new info and then my brain starts to spin and I get excited and think about stuff. So that's great, but that's for a different time. I can listen to books on tape while I'm walking or not even listen to anything and just be outside in nature. It's usually the most simple thing that for me feel really grounding. Cooking as well, without feeling like I have to take a food photo or like do something for the blog. Just cooking, like that's part of how I fell in love with food, is that it was definitely to some extent a form of moving meditation for me to be in the kitchen.
That's cool. I always say that meditation can be however we want it to look, but I never think about cooking.
Totally.
Definitely.
No, yeah. And the kitchen can be the most stressful place for people. So to each their own, but for me, it's that is more solitary and more, I don't have a family or kids to be, you know, cooking for where there's a timetable. So it gets to be more for me.
Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that chopping is very meditative.
Yeah.
Just like the repetitive action of chopping a bunch of stuff.
Right.
I don't know. For me, sometimes I'm like, I just want to eat right now. I don't want to take the time to do all this stuff.
But like with chopping, I mean, you have to be present. If you don't want to cut a finger off, you have to be kind of present. With
absolutely.
That's so much with any sort
That's
of,
a good point.
Any sort of, at least maybe like a movie meditation is that it's really helping us be parasympathetic, which is that rest and digest mode. So what helps us be parasympathetic is also being present and not having our brain go a million miles a minute to all the other things. So I think chopping kind of reinforces that because you've got to focus at least enough to make sure you still have your fingernail.
Yes. Very essential. Mm-hmm. So I think you just said in the last year or so, and that's what you're describing. Can you tell us more about what kind of self-care you did before that and like how it evolved? Was there a change?
Yeah, there was a change and my needs changed in the last year. You know, that's when I went fully out on my own in terms of business and really started to solidify what I wanted to do with my business and step into that role. So, my needs before, I think I was in an environment where I felt like my needs needed to be bigger. I think I was doing more intense exercise and feeling like that kind of had to be an outlet for me. Oftentimes, I think we create our own pressures. So even if we're in environments where we feel a certain amount of pressure, we're still like, we're deciding that to a major extent. So I noticed that I was choosing to exercise to relieve my stress, but I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. So I have an autoimmune condition with my thyroid, and that can lead to low energy or just really needing to be aware of how you're exerting yourself. So after a while, after a good amount of years, that high intensity exercise stopped feeling nourishing and started feeling really depleting really quickly. So once I transitioned into stepping into my business more fully last year, I was like, oh, working out like that is just pure stress. Like I feel my adrenaline going and not in like that exciting way. Like I'm laid out flat after workouts or I was getting a lot of tension headaches and, you know, kind of just tight muscles that weren't relaxing. So having to accept that was tough. Again, like who loves change? I mean, there's good stuff on the other side of change, but having to be like, oh no, that worked for me. Why is it no longer working for me? Or did it ever? And just making space around thinking about that stuff was also that alone is its own transition.
Yeah. And I can imagine that having to step away from doing something more intense maybe felt like weaker, or was it hard having to admit that, okay, my body can't handle this, or at least for now?
Yeah, it was really hard. It was something, I don't want to say I kept it quiet, but I feel like who's a person who has like the rebel tendency and the questioner tendency, the four tendencies? I am a questioner. But I'm also like a rebel. Like I don't really like people telling me what to do. I'm like, can you tell me what to do? And then I'm going to go do my own thing and not tell you about it. So I think I was feeling some rebel tendencies at that point, being like, you know what? If I feel like I don't like doing this high intensity workout stuff, and I feel like it's kind of getting to me on a more of an emotional level, then I'm just going to stop. And guess what? I can be a person who works in nutrition and wellness who has stopped working out. I have to feel like I can be able to reclaim wellness while pursuing that. Otherwise, like, what's the point? So I think it tied into also my mindset around how I consider wellness, where it's like, if something is feeling dogmatic, I can't believe that that is pursuing wellness. And that's what working out started to feel like. It's like, if you aren't chasing a certain goal or you aren't chasing, you know, this one ideal, then for me, I was like, there have to be more ideals. And also I get to decide what my ideal is. And obviously if I'm laid out and not feeling good, then this isn't working for me. So can I accept that with love? And that, yeah, that was a really tough process, but it had to happen.
Yeah. I'm glad that you've gotten to where you are, since that sounds like a tough transition.
Yeah. Thank you. And it was, you know, offering yourself, for me, it was a lot of rest and being comfortable with the discomfort of rest, because our society sure doesn't like us to rest, especially when we're entrepreneurs. Like, oh my gosh.
No.
Very at
all. Very subversive.
It is. Yeah.
And I just want to make a quick note, listeners, if you don't know The Four Tendencies, that's a book by Gretchen Rubin. And she's got the four tendencies. Lucia mentioned rebel and questioner. And the other two are obliger. And what's the other one?
I'm blanking.
Obviously, we aren't that one.
Yeah.
Upholder.
Oh, that's right.
Upholder. Because very few people are upholders. Anyway, it's interesting.
I was going to ask what you two are, if you want to share or if you know.
I'm fairly certain. I think isn't it like a quiz or anything like that? Yeah, I think I took it once.
Yeah, she has a quiz on her website.
Yeah, and at the time I was an obliger, but I feel like with those types of things, it can fluctuate. But yeah, I can definitely say that I oblige a lot.
Yeah.
I lean toward obliger too. I don't think I'm 100% obliger, because I think maybe I was in the past, and I've worked on being less, you know, should focused and just more true to myself. And I think that's helped me shift a little bit. I think I have a little dose of rebel in there. I think I have a little questioner in there too. The Taurus stubbornness, perhaps. I don't know. But yeah, I definitely read as obliger when I take the quiz.
Well, I would wager to say that the fixed signs of the zodiac, Taurus being one of them, are more likely to be upholders, because you're less likely to change direction as a fixed sign. That obviously has a lot to do with other things in your chart. But yeah, I would say if somebody has a lot of fixed energy in their chart, I bet they would also be an upholder.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I feel like maybe I am an upholder in some ways. Like, I do rules really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, sometimes I'm like mad at people in traffic. So I'm like, they think they don't have to use their turn signals. What's wrong with you? And it's like, not that important. But I'm like, no, like, why don't you just do it? But they're not upholders, so they're not going to do it. I don't know.
Rule regulations are here for society. We'd all get to where we want to go faster in terms of traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we talk about spiritual practice type stuff, since we're talking about fixed signs and astrology stuff, Lexi, do you want to get into Lucia's chart a little bit?
Sure. Are you ready, Lucia?
Oh my gosh, I'm so ready.
First quick question. Do you know anything about your chart? Have you ever seen it? Has anybody read it to you?
I have seen it. And my friend Emma, who is a wonderful, wonderful person and very knowledgeable in this area, has read it to me, but she's told it to me, and I'm a visual learner. So she's told me stuff and we have it recorded. We did a Zoom call and it was like in one ear, out the other. So I'm so excited to hear it again, because it's the kind of thing I need to write down and hear multiple times.
Well, and it's going to be recorded too. So you can just re-listen and refresher. So the things that I am going to tell you I'm going to kind of touch on it on both personally and professionally, just to kind of remain consistent with the podcast. So the first thing that we can start with, because obviously we've already talked about it, is your sun sign. And so you're a Taurus, but you are also a Taurus moon too. So these planets for you are within the sixth house. So what this means is, like, you're a very practical person. You like to have the facts. You do appreciate routine and health. Absolutely a major focus. The sixth house is the house of health, among other things. So health is a major focus for you. And ultimately, it's this practicality and this routine and things that you can be more efficient with and more organized with that ultimately make you feel more safe, like, within yourself. That's really the moon. The moon is our foundations, our inner self, and how we feel safe. So having those rules and plans and things like that really, really help you. But now this is where stuff gets interesting. So you have this very interesting chart where if you're one thing, you're kind of also the other thing too.
Oh, okay.
Because your sun is in Taurus, but your rising sign is the opposite sign of Scorpio. So those are opposites. So that means, you know, to boil it down, and maybe if there's any astrologers listening to this or people that understand this, that just means that it's basically activating the opposite houses at the same time at any given point.
Sure.
That's a better way to describe it. So your rising sign is who people meet, right? So Scorpio, I mean, you are a deep person. You're not surface level. You're very intense, or you can be intense. Obviously, creative. I mean, Taurus in itself, Scorpio in itself, very creative signs. And you're quite resourceful as well. The interesting thing about having your rising sign opposing your sun and moon is that, so Taurus is a very what you see is what you get, but Scorpio can be the very opposite, where they almost want to put a mask on things. And Scorpio goes through many transitions, many transformations. I couldn't help but think a lot about your Scorpio rising sign whenever you were talking about the transitions that you've even made with your health, which is activating that sixth house. So I thought that was very interesting. Now, your midheaven is in Virgo. Now, this is the career line. This is where we're getting really into the business stuff. A Virgo midheaven basically shows us that your career has a lot to do with, first and foremost, health.
Well, hey.
Yeah. The natural home for Virgo is in the sixth house, which, as we just said, is where your sun and your moon are. So that's the first thing that I thought was very interesting. But also a Virgo midheaven is really focused on details. And it could almost get to kind of mundane tasks, but you're really good at them. And so this is really kind of prevalent in, like, how you maybe run your business. And obviously, health is a huge focus for you. Now, even more interesting, about the rising sign. In business, this kind of gives us insights into your branding and how to appropriately, maybe not appropriately, but more comfortably portray yourself. And I love... So the name of your blog is Essential Omnivore. Essential Virgo, 1,000%. Virgo and Taurus.
Yeah.
And then omnivore, it's like a heavy-hitting word. It's like power,
right,
which is so Scorpio. And your tagline and what you're all about is taking the fear away from food. And Scorpio is all about going deep and digging into fear. So you maybe unknowingly are infusing your Scorpio rising into your branding.
I love that. Yes. I'm just like nodding. I know this is going to be like audio. I'm like nodding my head furious.
Yeah. Well, and even the colors that you chose, you have very deep colors, which is Scorpio so much, but you also have a little bit of like lighter, like pinks and such, which is super, super Taurus. Taurus is all about creating beauty and harmony, because it's ruled by Venus, so it really wants to make things beautiful. Mm. Now, last thing that I'll note is your North Node. And the North Node is indicative of our destiny in this lifetime. It's something that we're supposed to strive for. Every north node has a south node, which is the south node is something that we're already really great at and just dominate. So your north node is in Pisces, which happens to be the opposite sign of Virgo, which is where your midheaven is.
Okay.
Yes. So, and it's also in the third house, which means your south node is in the ninth house. So to boil this down in a really easy way to kind of gather this in is that, you know, you're already really great at being practical, having systems in place. And what your north node really wants you to do is actually accept in the flow and to be a little bit more intuitive, a little bit less planned. And that the knowledge that you acquire and the things that you learn, it's not just for you, it's for others. You're supposed to share these gifts of knowledge that you have with other people and letting go of the grip and just trusting and letting that flow actually take hold, I guess.
Oh, letting go of the grip is so hard.
It is so hard.
Yeah.
My little body's like, no.
But yeah. especially, you know what, for you, like, you are zero fire, by the way. You have nothing in a fire sign. And you have very little air as well. You are earth, water, girl. Like, let's get all the practicality out there and let's share all the emotion. Like, you're deep. You are, there is nothing surface level about you.
Right. Yep. That also, yeah, that resonates. And I noticed, you know, definitely like, in terms of exploring where I can go with business, that is something that I've noticed is who I've been drawn to in terms of business, or who I idolize is maybe not the right word, but who I'm just kind of like look up to. And there are people who are also into their spirituality. And so they're talking about some of these similar things. And more often than not, they're Leos. And they're like super fiery. I'm like, oh, I get it now. I didn't get it before, but I get it. Yeah, so that's really interesting.
So that's kind of a cool point to bring up, that a lot of times you actually might understand this more than most other people. We crave the thing that we lack. So you have very, like I said, there's no planets in a fire sign for you at all. And so you just are naturally gravitating to these people that can give that to you. Very similar to how our bodies crave the right foods.
Totally. I was going to say, like, well, when you crave chocolates, because you're, well, sugar, first off, but it could be low in magnesium, blah, blah, blah. Crave chocolate around your menstrual cycle, mm-hmm. magnesium, all that stuff. So, yes.
Yeah.
That resonates.
Awesome. Well, if you want to chat any other time about more stuff, we totally can.
Yeah, I love that. No, I love that. And it's both reassuring and also kind of, at least I would say for my science and kind of what I'm hearing too, is I've been using this word so much, but it's liberating, because for me, right, it's like saying, okay, with the north node, like let go a little bit and like see what happens and that we can trust that. I love that. That is definitely like in business and beyond, like so spot on.
Which isn't that what we've been talking about the majority today anyway?
Yep, very fitting.
Yep.
Yeah.
All the time. So quick question, Lexi. Mm-hmm. When you have a moon that's the same as your sun, that means you were born on a new moon, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I have that too.
Oh, very cool. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yep. And then if it's opposite, so like, for example, if either one of you, your moon was in Scorpio, then it would be you would be born under a full moon.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love this because I feel like I've seen my birth chart and I feel like you do such a good job of like giving the tidbits, right? Like, are there a lot of takeaways from this conversation? Mm-hmm. But reading those birth charts or seeing people read them, you can go so deep. Like there's so many different like connections between this and that and what's going on. Like,
oh yeah.
There's just so much.
Yeah. My meetings take a minimum of an hour, usually a little bit longer, because there's just so much. And it especially is fun whenever you're talking to somebody who has kind of a wherewithal about their chart, because we can bypass the, well, this is what it means whenever Mercury is in Virgo. We can really get into the, okay, well, your Mercury is connected to your Jupiter, and this is what that means. But for you guys as new moon babies, your lives are about new beginnings and creating out of nothing. Anything that you understand about a new moon, like the time of a new moon and where we're supposed to be setting intentions and setting our goals and setting a course of direction and things like that, that's like your life. Like, it's all about, what can we create with this? What new beginnings can come about from this new opportunity?
I love that. It almost feels like kind of maybe to some extent looking at like silver linings, like saying, okay, like, right, where can we find creation? Where can we make good or just like have recognition that comes? And that's definitely something I talk about all the time in my business, right? Like, health and wellness stuff can get really heavy. It can get super deep and you kind of get like stuck in the muck, and that's a fine place to be, but really working on saying like, well, even if I don't know why this isn't happening, what is it teaching me? Or what am I learning?
Yes.
What am I taking away from this? That's creation too, for sure.
100%.
Yeah. Well, I love it.
Cool. I love it too. So can you tell us about any spiritual practices that you follow that impact you as a human, as a business owner?
Yes. I feel like I don't have a lot of spiritual practices, but I love...
We use this very loosely.
Yeah.
So whatever feels like that to you.
Yeah. I love the talk around spiritual practices because I think I grew up not religious at all. Like, I grew up with parents who are like, well, if anyone asks to say you're Christian, like, just say something and then go away. So I think that's a different experience than a lot of people, and religion is different than spirituality. But with that, you know, kind of lens growing up, I don't think it wasn't until maybe the last 5 or 6 years that I was like, as much as I don't still identify as being religious, I actually do identify as spiritual, and I don't know how to expand upon that, except I believe that, and that resonates kind of in my body and mentally and emotionally. So in terms of practices, I think maybe my biggest spiritual practice is like mindfulness practices and meditation practices. And I sometimes feel like I say that and people automatically are like, well, whenever anyone is like, I meditate, I'm mindful. It's like, you do that for 20 minutes twice a day. Like, you're so amazing at it. Meditating is so tough. It is so hard. It's so hard to show up to it on the daily, but that sense that I was saying before of like, you know, what are my kind of self-care acts of walking, being out in nature and like cooking, how those give me that sense of having my brain kind of like shift and kind of down-regulate. Mindfulness meditation practices do the same thing. And for me, having your brain be able to get into that state, that feels really spiritual for me. So that's probably my biggest practice that I have.
I like the idea of making more space in your head.
Yeah.
Because I kind of define it that way for myself too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to demonize our culture, but it's so easy to have our information, and information is amazing. All the things that we can create from information. And I want to respect that because it's a lot of how I taught myself about subjects that became very empowering for me, but it can be easy to, you know, be in that cycle of always wanting to gain more information and what that does to our brains and that easy access. I think it's actually, you know, kind of have to flex that muscle to say, and brain gets to calm down and brain gets to slow down for a little bit.
The inertia of that is really powerful for me. I don't know if you've seen me post about the digital munchies, which is a term that I coined recently.
Oh my gosh. No, I haven't.
Yeah. I feel like there's a food metaphor for consumption. Yeah. So like the food metaphor works on a bunch of different levels, and I'll probably keep finding different ones. But like, I think about like the information that I consume is like, okay, it's food for your brain. Cool. That makes sense. But like, sometimes I feel like I just have the munchies when I have like anxious energy. So it's like, open another tab, scroll, scroll, scroll. And I'm like getting more and more anxious as I do it. I'm not even reading. I'm just like tapping on Instagram stories to go through all the things. I'm like, I'm not even seeing any of this, but I want to keep doing it and I don't want to stop. It's like this compulsion, and it makes me feel mentally the same way as if I ate like a whole box of cookies.
Yeah. It's like, it gives you this little, like this like short-term boost or short-term high or just like short-term distraction. Totally.
Yeah.
100%. I feel like I was doing that last night. I was just like flipping between Instagram and Facebook and like two other apps. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm caught up. We're fine. It was totally a little like trying to snack all the time.
Yeah.
And then repulsed you look up and 2 hours went by.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
I would say the comparison between look at all this time that went by is look at how these pants don't fit anymore. How did that happen?
Yeah.
And, you know, coming back to those mindfulness practices, I think what those give me is, yeah, it kind of like can help erase some of that munchy feeling. Where it's not negating it, that's going to come up. It's going to come up. We're humans. Like, we're going to crave things that maybe don't serve us in the long term the way that we say we want to be served. But those practices, which, again, for me, fall under the header of being more spiritual or being, you know, yeah, more spiritually aligned, that, yeah, it quiets the noise. It quiets those munchies down, way down.
Yes, which is so hard to do, but... But like we were talking about, everything is a practice, and at least we can commit to the practice. We can't commit to being perfect at it, but you know, we can just say, I'm going to keep showing up. Like, do you find when sometimes you say, I meditate, people are like, oh, I can't meditate. And they get this like immediate, just like closed off, like, oh, you think you're so virtuous. And I'm like, no, I really don't. Like, I show up and I'm not good at it. Like, everybody else, like Pema Chodron, is not good at it.
Yeah,
she has said that, like, she has devoted her entire life to it, and like, we're humans, so we're not going to be good at it, but that's not the point.
Yeah, that was definitely the brain shift I had to make around working out too, because I basically gave myself a year where I was like, pretty much the most, quote unquote, using air quotes, I'm going to do is walk my dog, right? And once I moved to Portland, I was like, but there's something to working out that I really enjoy and does help me feel grounded and, you know, mitigates anxiety and helps me feel clearer. Like, I like working out, but I need a different style. And so, you know, coming back to a physical practice after stepping away for such a long time, there's a lot of that where it's like, I notice people's reactions and my reactions to myself being like, how do I keep letting myself show up to this? And how do I let it always be a practice? It's definitely because there will be no perfection, like, especially, yeah, like, I was like the computer kid. Like, there's not an athletic bone in my body. So it's definitely practice. And how can we enjoy the journey? Like we were saying earlier, if we can't enjoy that journey, and not that we have to be like happy and have sunshine all the time, but if we're not choosing actions in business or in life or what have you, that you at least, for the most part, if you step back and think about them, you mostly enjoy or you find joy in, like, what are we doing? Why are we making those choices? So it's, yeah, it's nuanced and it's definitely a thing.
Yeah. But even if it's really hard, we know it's a worthy process. So that's why we're still in it.
Yeah.
So Lucia, do you have any other thoughts or things that you want to talk about that we didn't get to today?
I don't think so. I think this is such a fun conversation. And I loved, Lexi, thank you for incorporating the astrology aspect, because it feels very, I was going to say grounding. I'm like, oh my God, could a Taurus be more ironic? Grounding. But it did, you know, and that if we're going to come back to being people who own their own businesses, it can feel so ungrounding and unsettling because of all the things that we've talked about, where you aren't sure or you're not an expert. So how can you trust yourself and blah, blah, blah. So I love that incorporation of the astrological piece, because it is very reaffirming from a business standpoint. And like, where do you get where are you affirmed when it comes to business? You know, that I think that's something that is missing a lot in our culture is people who are saying like, oh, I'm proud of you. Like you're doing it. That can be a missing piece because like our culture just moves so quickly.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you are very welcome. It was definitely my pleasure.
Awesome. So our very last question is, what are you excited about right now?
Ooh. Okay. I'm excited about, I mean like right now in business or just
today,
anything?
Whatever,
anything.
Okay. I'm excited because today the clouds broke and like, there's still clouds outside right now. I have a big window I'm looking at, but there's blue sky and it's like bright blue sky.
Ooh.
And Portland is definitely very much stereotypically very cloudy and not so many breaks in the sky in the season. So I'm very excited to be outside and it's not cold, it's not rainy. So I'm excited for that.
That sounds great. I was in Portland in February and it was very gloomy. It was like 35 and rainy and just like the worst weather. So I feel you. And I need some blue sky. It's like getting kind of bright out today, but no, it's still snow.
It's okay. it's bright because the sun is reflecting off of the snow.
Yeah, well, that's what it will be. But right now it's just a bright cloudy. So I'll take it, I guess. Well, thank you, Lucia. This has been such a great conversation. It was so nice to talk to you on the podcast.
Yes, thank you both so much for your time. And this, I mean, like hour just flew by. So thank you so much.
If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on the podcast app of your choice, leave a rating and review on iTunes, or share with a friend.
Or if you really love it, you can support the making of this podcast by becoming a patron on Patreon for exclusive content.
You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Being a Whole Person. We'd love to connect with you. Thanks for listening.